This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. On this program, we have occasionally looked into the reporting of finance, polling, statistics, and other math-heavy stories to see if journalists have sufficient mastery to accurately explain their subject matter. But according to Gene Epstein, economics editor for Barron's, there's a more sinister problem still. Journalists and pundits who twist numbers to make a point. He calls the practice econo-spinning, and he joins us now. Gene, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
One of the topics you homed in on was the bestseller Freakonomics by Stephen Levitt and the journalist Stephen Dubner.
Yeah.
A runaway bestseller, mm-hmm. and the premise of the book was to use economic principles to itself debunk some conventional wisdom on any number of things, one of the most controversial of which was decreases in the crime rate. Levitt had maintained that the reason for the dramatic dip in crime over the 90s was due to legalized abortion. You say that he missed something very obvious.
Yes, what he missed is that if legalized abortion had something to do with the plummeting crime rate in the 90s, then it must have affected the crime rate in the 90s by causing a decline in births in the crime-prone population in the early 70s. But what he did not look at was births. And so if you just look up the birth figures, you find there was no decline in births as a share of the population going into the 90s. So even if they had more abortions, it doesn't necessarily mean that they had fewer babies. And because it was kind of a sexy, interesting, provocative finding, it was generally accepted by his vast readership.
After maybe the interest rate set by the Federal Reserve, probably the most followed number in Washington is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics every month on the employment rates. And it's fairly complex economic information boiled down into a couple of numbers. And you write about how the press so hangs on these numbers that they report apparent increases and decreases even if they don't exist. Tell me about statistical significance, please.
Statistical significance, right. Well, merely because the number changed, it doesn't necessarily mean that the thing itself changed. For example, any time the unemployment rate moves by a tenth of a percentage point, say from 4.7% to 4.8%, that's a change that is so small, there's no way to tell whether there really was a change.
We're going to be seeing a lot of this in the political races. Poll results that say so-and-so has a 3-point lead with a 5% margin of error.
That's right.
Which is incorrect because nobody knows who's ahead because the margin of error exceeds the apparent difference in their percentages.
When the Bureau of Labor Statistics publishes a number like 4.6 and 4.7, the media will take it literally. The commissioner of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, at a public forum with a bunch of newspaper reporters, complained that they trying to squeeze the sizzle out of everything the BLS reports. And the response she got from a very prominent journalist was that he had no choice. He had to report the number because he could not explain to his readers statistical insignificance. The problem with doing that is that there's no sizzle in it.
That's a good example of a general problem and one that listeners, readers, and viewers can look for as they read about economic coverage. But you devote most of your book to taking on individual targets, notably Paul Krugman of the New York Times, for his citation of certain unemployment statistics that you say he is taking out of context and incorrectly conflating. Let's just say you have thoroughly debunked Paul Krugman on this. What larger lesson is there for us to learn?
The larger lesson to learn is that it's very unlikely that if you read the chapters in which I talk about the unemployment rate, long-term unemployment, about discouraged workers, the labor force participation rate, all of them concepts related to the unemployment rate, and all of them concepts that Krugman misinterpreted. What you would come away with is not just an understanding that our most important economic journalist because of his position at the New York Times, continually misinterprets such numbers. But what you'd also come away with is an enhanced ability to understand what these numbers are all about.
Did you have a larger mission here?
I don't think I had a larger mission in the sense of its being, let's say, ideological. But I also take on the Wall Street Journal, the cash cow that is part of my own employer, Dow Jones, for its own econo-spinning. And I certainly did not want to give any aid and comfort to any particular position on the conventional political spectrum.
Let me ask you one more thing.
Okay.
I have this image of you.
Yes.
Sitting there reading Paul Krugman's column, you know, and watching Lou Dobbs and reading this mammoth bestseller, Freakonomics, and just seething and seething and saying to yourself, all right, I know I was going to write this primer on how to really honestly broker statistical information and other data, but no, I've got to destroy these men. Am I warm on that one?
I'm afraid you're not. I do feel passion about the issues. However, the problem that I had with respect to writing a primer about economic data is that it would be too dry. And as a result, people wouldn't read it. Now, I then realized, however, that Lou Dobbs, Krugman, and others actually have used this data to deal with subjects that matter. The effect of foreigners on the labor markets in the case of Dobbs. In the case of Levitt, perhaps the most important issue of all, the plummeting crime rate. Do we want to believe in findings that make no sense? Because if we do, we might not have a sufficient understanding about policies that can continue to bring about the plummeting crime rate. So I found the opportunity to both teach people about the use of economic data while at the same time dealing with issues that mattered.
All right. Well, Gene, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gene Epstein is the economics editor of Barron's and author of Econospinning: How to Read Between the Lines When the Media Manipulate the Numbers. We asked Paul Krugman of the New York Times to respond to Epstein's charges that he irresponsibly mixed apples with oranges, and this is what Krugman wrote, quote, "He apparently thinks he can read my mind. He claims that I mixed data from two surveys to write an article about job growth, even though data from only one survey appeared in the article. I used only the one survey that I cited. Please let your listeners know that I am happy to acknowledge errors that I actually make, but not those that are figments of a critic's imagination."
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.